from your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, March 23rd, as we record this podcast. Spring training is over as the White Sox will play an exhibition game against the Athletics on Monday, which means opening day is just 4 days away, weather pending, of course, in Chicago. Our live podcast, opening day eve at the Remova Theater, is Wednesday night, and we can't wait to see everyone. So it's a very busy and exciting week going on at Sox Machine and around Major League Baseball. In this episode, we make our 2025 season predictions for the Chicago White Sox. We'll have our win-loss record prediction later this week in a future post on SoxMachine.com. But in this episode, we'll make our picks to click in who will lead the White Sox in major offensive and pitching categories. But before we do that, there's a list of roster moves the White Sox are implementing, and some are being forced on them because more injuries keep popping up. So let's start with the latest news, and joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan down in Arizona, and Jim Margulis, who's in the Chicagoland area. And hello, gents. Jim, we survived another spring training. I don't think I could say the same for some White Sox players, but after this spring training 2025, what are your overall impressions on how things went for the White Sox?
It feels like you can't say they're the best laid plans because, you know, the plans weren't that great. I would say like they're laid plans and they're going awry. Like it wasn't completely improvised or just like throwing stuff against the wall, but it was close in terms of, you know, I guess Chris Getz had an ethos, but not really, you're understanding why the players he signed for less than $5 million. Yeah, I guess Martin Perez earns that on a technicality, but they're all coming to the White Sox for a reason. And, you know, health is one of them, or age, you know, and the way those factors combine to where like a lot of them are not making it to the starting gate on time or not in their best shape. And that's, I think, posing an enormous amount of stress, poses stress on me, because normally I have like the most essential White Sox list. Normally at this point I have it mostly done. I'm just shifting like whether 29th should be 28th or 16th should be 17th, that sort of thing. And instead I'm trying to figure out like how many should I actually, how deep should this list run? Like, should it be like 17 at this point? Cause everybody feels so just fungible or tenuous, and like, why even bother? Which I think is going to be a common theme throughout the season for White Sox fans and I guess content creators alike, in terms of like, should we even invest the time in like this particular story if it's not going to last? So, yeah, it's difficult times, and you're really hoping that this vision that Chris Getz sold Will Venable on, and, you know, a bunch of other coaches and, you know, names that were respected around the league, they liked what he had to say. They liked what he's trying to build. Right now, there's really no evidence of that in terms of just the talent on the roster. And it seems like after a 121 loss season, you would like to see a little bit more pointing to here's why they're not going to be nearly as bad versus regression, which is really like the only argument right now. They surely they'll live up to their projection of 49 to 52 wins or whatever it is, which is still terrible. That's still a terrible projection number. So it's not what you want. And it's I still think, you know, there's more injuries that could be had. Like, the rotation's still pretty much intact, which I think is, you know, Drew Thorpe not being around is not what they were hoping, but also they weren't necessarily counting on him for opening day at the start of spring training. So like the rotation is more or less what they thought it would be, but all the depth is removed, kind of like a game of like, don't break the ice, or was it Kerplunk? Yep. Like all the straws being removed to where like next move is going to cause it all to collapse. That's kind of what it feels like this roster is right now. Like, it's close to what they were going to put out there, but man, the plan B's are now like plan H's at this point. And I guess we should be have some preparation H in store for the amount of pain that's going to be inflicted upon us if that's what happens.
Yeah, the vibes right now in social media and the Sox Machine comments after Sox Fest were, I think this team is going to improve. I think they got a chance to win 60 games. Now it's quickly shifted to, are they even going to win 41? And James, this is where I have to toss it over to you because you have been reporting a lot of this news on SoxMachine.com. I think maybe things are still coming in. We are still lacking clarity on who's going to Chicago to play on opening day on Thursday. So lay it on us. Who is all hurt and won't be available for the White Sox on opening day?
I'm going to rule out Brandon Drury for sure because he's both hurt and not employed by the organization as of recording.
Good
So that
guess.
really puts the odds against him. I really like, the watching player development portion of like this job, but more than like just the pure reporting. But I do get like today, like days like Sunday are like exemplify like how you could get like addicted to it. Like not every job does it start out with like, here's a series of events that have occurred. None of them make sense. You have to piece it together, ideally by lunch. And then like it kind of unfolds and you learn why you don't fully understand anything. There's like enough teasers for like the next episode that more mysteries are afoot, but like you get some sort of resolution where you can be like, all right, I feel like we've gotten over sort of the initial confusion of just like, the start of every White Sox day being like, a comedian's murdered in New York, and you need to figure out why. To at least something I felt like we could write. So Drury got released. I feel like that's probably the biggest mystery. Though there are close seconds. He fractured his thumb, and the expectation with that, he has a specialist visit on Monday where like the actual timeline is supposed to be hashed out. And obviously not knowing the timeline to officially is part of the story. But the initial expectation was that he would be have to be, any fracture in his thumb like that would require like 2 weeks of just no baseball activity. And as a result, there would then be, you'd imagine, 1 to 2 weeks of ramping him up, or does he need a couple of rehab games, something like that, where you could probably project him to be out close to a month. Without even knowing, like, is this a fracture that might heal a little bit more quickly or even more slowly or what, or this is something that would take a while for him to get his timing back, yada, yada, yada. So this is the time of year, and Drury, this weekend is actually the standard deadline for type XXB free agents with Brandon Drury, as just guys who were basically on a major league roster to close out last season and are on NRI this year. It's for basically veteran players who are on this sort of situation rather than like career minor leaguers. So they kind of is in since in the last CBA, it's a standard part of these contracts that they have the option to essentially approach the team at the end of spring training, like, hey, am I going to make it? If not, release me from my contract and I get an opportunity elsewhere. And they do that by basically triggering their opt out. The way it's explained, it was kind of like, each side has to threaten each other properly. And then, but while it is technically like, hey, play me or trade me type of like a approach, it's almost standard. It's like it gives the player clarity to just know where they stand. If you had the option to know if you're going to make the team 5 days before the end of camp versus not, you'd pick to know every single time. So if you're going to make the team, triggering the opt out usually doesn't really result in you losing your job. But in this case, Drury's camp triggered the opt out as is standard, was expected by everyone to do. And right as that happens, he breaks his thumb. So they can't undo triggering the opt out. And the White Sox are not sure whether he's gonna, how long he's gonna be out. About to do like five other like things with their 40 man, like clearing spaces and filling them back and forth already. And they opted to give him his release. Now the hope is that they can bring him back on some sort of minor league deal, but he is now a free agent. He is, coming off a really strong spring where other than his thumb, he'd be appealing as like a bench bat to add for somebody. But there's general optimism that he wants to be back. And, this still represents his best opportunity. Like a lot of teams like the Yankees that will want a right-handed bat, they want one right now, like, 'cause they're a win now team. They're not willing to like necessarily punt a month in any regard. So Brewery wouldn't necessarily fill their needs better than maybe other options. So it kind of remains, it still seems like, the White Sox are the team where he could probably come in once he's healthy, is batting fourth or fifth and being DH every single day. And that, I think it's still true why he picked them as their best opportunity, now or when he's healthy, than it was, at the start of camp. But he's released, so really anything could happen. It feels a little bit, once I removed myself from like the immediate emotion of like, this was like who everyone in camp thinks is your best hitter is going to play a big role for you. And even knowing that, he doesn't really have a role probably beyond this season, the ideal relationship with Drury and the White Sox is probably a 3.5 month long one. And, there's not necessarily, he's got versatility, but he's not going to be an above, he's going to be a below average defender at any spot you put him at. So the defensive value maybe not be, he could objectively not be as valuable a player to them as like Brooks Baldwin, even for making things work, just because like the defensive utility is left. So I know like best hitter triggers like these reactions, like how can you let your best hitter walk away? But I do get like the White Sox, with some removal, and this is not someone who necessarily is as meaningful for them as filling their 40 man and using a spot on as even, the prospects that they're stashing on their 40 man. So it just still seems like a big risk for a team that like is not going to produce offense very readily, seemingly. But I get why it's not, when you're viewing like the long-term usage of their, how they're using their 40 man spots, I get how they're able to get to that spot a bit more of being like, we just can't risk this. This isn't worth it. And we need to do other stuff. So, and that's just one of the things that they did. The other thing is that, turn around is that they are still this rebuilding team in full, like, we need to gobble up assets whenever we can mode, and they're at top of the waiver order. So when they see a guy that they basically had targeted as they wanted to add, this Mike Vassell was, gets mentioned that he was someone basically who was under consideration for the Rule 5 pick, which he then got picked by the Phillies, who then traded him to the Rays, who then DFA'd him. So now he's here. But this was someone that they viewed as potential to, starting depth of some kind. Do they really view him as like a front of the rotation guy when he's, everyone's kind of pegged him as a back end guy, and he's, coming off a couple of rough stretches in AAA? Probably not, but they kind of view them as one right now. He immediately becomes kind of like a bullpen swing man for a team that, as we've been talking about, is losing rotation depth by the day. And he's someone they view as just a rotation option in general, long term. He's had some pedigree in the past where it was expected he could be a number four starter type, and they identified some traits with them that they think it can fix. How well it'll work, we'll see, but it kind of makes sense with them now and in the future, even if it doesn't seem as nearly as cool a use of a 40-man spot of former Silver Slugger Brandon Drury hitting 25 home runs for a team that really doesn't have that profile or the ability to entertain their major league fans without him. So speaking of the dwindling starting depth, we've gone through all the guys who have had TJ this spring, Drew Thorpe being the most recent one. I asked about Mason Adams because the last update we had the GM, because he was talking about all these this situation. I asked about, the Fletcher strain. Is there a timeline? Because last it was, unaddressed. And, Getz responded by saying, like, well, it'd be all the same as Thorpe. And I was like, happy news. So Tommy John. And initially
Gotcha.
the answer was yes. But then it was later clarified, it was PR, that he has an appointment with Dr. Keith Meister, who's basically Doc's Tommy John's this spring so far, this week, and all the options on the table. But he is not, set to get Tommy John officially yet. However, it's like, I guess literally a Freudian slip of just like what they've already bucketed the likely outcome for this to be. It's a flexor strain that's, very often a precursor. So it seems like Mason Adams, someone they're very excited about being someone that they would call up middle of the season and be a depth starter. Ethan Katz is really optimistic about him, thus is now added to the pile, making it all the more Vassell seem a lot more pressing of an acquisition than just, hey, we're still gobbling up everything on the waiver wire because that's where we're at as an organization. So I think we're halfway through.
Halfway through.
Mike Tauchman apparently tweaked his hamstring running first to third on Monday. Hadn't heard about it until Daryl tweeted it this morning. I joked with Daryl that he should tell Tauchman that his hamstring was his last scoop of his career. But with
Time to call
that,
it. Time to call it a career.
so gets termed it as we're leaning towards ILing him, but maybe he could be ready for opening day. I don't think I find it hard to think of many instances where the GM said, maybe, probably will IL him and then did it. They tend to lean towards underplaying how likely an IL placement is. So I would put Tauchman and thus Josh Rojas, who has the hairline fracture of his right big toe, as much as they emphasize that it's supposed to be a short absence, is someone that they very much expect to put on the IL. He hasn't played a game really since it happened, whereas guys like Andrew Benintendi and Austin Slater were in the field on Sunday all playing and doing everything, and they're pretty much ticketed to make the opening day roster at this point. But because Tauchman's calmed down, now all of a sudden there might be a role for Travis Jankowski after all. Though that would require opening up a 40-man spot, which, as we know, is more than a notion, and they use the Prelander Barroa 60-day IL exemption to add Vassell. They now have a Thorpe one that they haven't used yet, but then there's two more 40-man spots that we still kind of have to figure out if it goes the way I'm kind of expecting, which is that Clevinger would be added as well,
Oh,
and
yeah.
Chase Mydroth is at this point like the guy they've been giving all the shortstop reps to. Like Nick Maton and Jacob Amaya are options, I suppose, but like not really like necessarily fitting into a long-term plan. And while they both, certainly Maton, the plate had probably had better statistical offensive springs than Mydroth, like this both is more on their long-term plan. And realistically, like if Chase Mydroth is a starting quality shortstop, this is kind of your window to find out before Colson, theoretically slams it shut or, has more to say about it. So that's kind of my leaning on where they'll go, especially hearing that, Omar Narvaez is expected to opt out. And that suggests that Corey Lee has won the backup catcher job, and that would be one place where they don't have to add a 40-man spot. I'd also heard that, Lenin Sosa's got a roster spot. I don't think it surprises anyone, but he was out of options. So with the way he performed, at least, not so much on like how clearly they made it that he was going to win a roster spot ahead of time, like Miguel Vargas, the other out of options guys. But with Rojas hurt, with Lenin hitting, I think that's kind of put him in a pretty good spot. And he's been, I talked to him today, and he's been very buying into using the trajectory machine and all the like the swing decision stuff that was kind of the big emphasis on what he needs to improve in his game and also what that addresses. So he would be potentially now kind of a proof of concept with some of the things they're working on and trying to make them rep live at bats. So is that everything? I think it is.
Damn. That's
Brian
hard to say.
Ramos. Brian Ramos. He walked past while we were in the scrum with Getz, and I was like, oh yeah, that guy's still not throwing. He did DH in the game on Sunday, but not really a big update with him. They just said that he's still in the throwing program. He's gonna, I feel like if he can't play defense at all, and since he only has one option a year left, and I don't think they'd necessarily be in a rush to burn it, I'd be more likely that he like stays in Arizona and maybe keeps getting like at bats and backfields games. Because not that necessarily they'd be like hyped to send him straight from Arizona onto the major league roster, but I just don't think they would. They might could just option him and have him DH in Charlotte. I suppose that works fine too. Though DH reps are probably something Caro and Teal would have something to say about down there. But kind of just a weird spring from him in general, where I at least from what following him as a prospect, if you had told me they were both healthy, would have liked him more than Miguel Vargas as their, to make your starting third base and really give a spin
Yeah.
to. So understanding the out of option situation makes them feel like it's kind of now or never for finding out what Vargas has. But instead, he hasn't been able to play defense because he hasn't thrown. So really, there was no competition at all there for someone that a lot of times I just thought was going to like take over with Colson, and the two of them are going to hold down the left side of the infield for a while. Instead, we got neither of them. So what a spring.
What a way to wrap it up. What a spring. Wednesday night, March 26th, will be opening day eve, co-hosted by Sox Machine and our friends from the 108 at the Romova Theater. Come join us as we get ready for another season of Chicago White Sox baseball, or at least pretend to be excited. Special guests include Jim Callis of MLB.com, as he'll talk about the top White Sox prospects and answer your questions live about the farm system. Courtney Finnecom of Baseball Is Not Boring podcast. She stole the show last year and is ready to dish her predictions for 2025. Jim Margulis and James Fegan will have a live PO Sox segment to answer questions from the audience. And our friends from the 108 will close out the show by making their very wild and entertaining predictions, including the famous steak dinner bet between Beefloaf and I. Tickets are just $20. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the show will start at 7:30 p.m. Purchase your tickets at RomovaChicago.com or in the ticket link in this podcast post on SoxMachine.com. With Mike Vassell now joining the Chicago White Sox, James, I'm imagining out of the gate, the White Sox starting pitchers are not going to be able to throw 100 pitches. They're not going to be able to take on a full workload. It'll be modified a little bit. And that's where Vassell, we could see a couple of times in the homestand against the Angels and the Twins. Is that the most likely scenario that we're going to see Mike Vassell? I don't think he's competing for a role in the starting rotation, right?
No, Getz said he'd be starting out of the bullpen from the outset, at least. He does think he'll probably make some starts this year, but that's kind of in response to needs. It's funny because I asked Will Benable, like, you could potentially, I think the likelihood that, certainly Bryce Wilson making the team, also being kind of the swingman started that, but also Tyler Gilbert. Who's the other one I'm thinking of? But even that is, my question was like, is there like kind of a concerted plan to keep these guys stretched out while they're working in bullpen roles? Like, can you really like sequence it so that they're pitching like 2 to 3 innings every time they go out? And his answer was like a pretty straightforward, well, no. Said, in my experience with clubs that try to keep multiple guys stretched out, it really is tough. You're also trying to find paths to wins, and it's hard to control that. So just winning the game and getting through our path to that win is the most important thing. Guys have to be stretched out the best they can. If they're not able to, it is what it is, which I thought was like, definitely better to be realistic than kind of pretending you can do something you can't, or have a plan that's doomed to fail. But it will be interesting to see how that evolves, because I think they like Vassell organizationally more as a starter, but I don't think it makes any sense, especially after like the spring he had compared to like what your other guys had, to push that as a bigger priority. They're just like doing whatever they need. But as you mentioned, like Cannon threw like 5 innings in a minor league game today, or Sunday, I should say. No one's really been out past 5. And even in the case of Shane Smith, I don't feel like he's been out past 4 yet. So I certainly don't think we're seeing like a replication of like Garrett Crochet pitching 7 on opening day again here. Or was it 6? But either way, like I think yeah, he will probably be like a swingman, but it'll be interesting to see like who they really have to prioritize, really getting the 2 to 3 innings that often to keep them stretched out, to keep them be a starting option, because they can't do it for all 3. They'll probably be pretty hard doing it with 1. So that's what Vassell is looking at, and maybe at the start of the season where you're seeing that those 2 to 3 inning outings, that's where it'll come from. But also, if they're doing that off a lot, it's probably because they're losing. Like if they're in a position where they're like winning a game, which will probably be close because they're probably a low scoring team, even in their ideal build, it's more of a manufacturer defense and pitching sort of operation. You probably see them like trot out their leverage arms. So if they're having any measure of success, I don't know if those long relief options are really going to be operating in that function. I think it's when somebody gets rocked and you need 3 to 4 innings of coverage. Or in some situation where it's a blowout, you can have somebody really get 3 innings in. But this is not a team, even like the kind of better case scenarios we have for them. Seeing them winning via blowouts, let alone, with any kind of regularity. Jose Ruiz got like 65 innings of work in 2021, almost exclusively pitching low leverage because that's how much like low leverage work that team that's winning games all the time had to go around. But it's really hard to sustain more than one of those roles, and I don't think this team is really built to. We could see what Vasil looks like by a short reliever just by kind of osmosis here, but how the season plays out.
Well, on the pitching side, it's going to be interesting, especially out of the bullpen, especially with James mentioning that the White Sox still have some 40-man roster things to do. They have that exhibition game against the Athletics. Typically, with the exhibition games, you would have to, in an ideal situation, you would like to know who you're bringing up to opening day, like a last opportunity to get an opening day lineup maybe together, see how it looks for a practice run before the real thing starts. Entering tomorrow in that exhibition game against the Athletics, James, are the White Sox close to knowing? I have to imagine that. I mean, time's not on their side. They have to be close in figuring out who they're taking to Chicago.
I would say roughly, yeah. It's just maybe final determinations on, IL placements, Rojas and Tauchman, which they're not fully settled on, even like they're well enough on to know where they're going. But yeah, I think as far as like figuring out who they're carrying or deciding about like. I think they're rough conceptually fine as far as traveling. It's just, it could be a while before they tell us because of like
Got
the
it.
logistics involved roster wise. Like we kind of talk through the Drury stuff here, but like a lot of the explanation of that was just off the record because you kind of have to explain Drury's side of it a bit to really to understand the situation. And that's not something you see the team usually speak in an official manner about like what a player did, especially one who's no longer in the organization, because that's not really their place to. So it's kind of like a tricky line to walk where you like trying to explain like why the team do this thing, but you really kind of need both sides of the story to understand how the circumstance came about. So I think that's sort of the kind of stuff with players having opt-outs that delays us kind of getting official word from a situation that's probably a bit more clarified internally than it seems on the outside.
Well, as far as the position players go, I'm curious to see how the bench goes. And you mentioned that Corey Lee won the backup catcher job. I was assuming he was going to be the starting catcher. Are we going to see Matt Theis more than Corey Lee to start the season, James? Or is this going to be 50-50 timeshare?
Yeah, so maybe that's a misspeak, but like I think I guess Tice was the one what I felt was safer throughout all of camp. So
Okay.
I can't necessarily say like Tice, I don't think it's going to be an 80-20 starting mix or anything like that. I think Tice would be ahead. And one of the main reasons, and I think some of it, like I had heard separately that it was going to be Lee, but Getz was kind of like trying to tell us without telling us when he was describing it. It's like, well, one of them's right-handed and two of them are left-handed. And ideally you'd want some balance between them. It's like, oh, okay. But that does indicate like he does expect them, and something as mentioned with Caro and Teal eventually as well, is that he wants these guys to essentially be a platoon, to as far as how they're used offensively. So that would naturally lead to Theis playing more. I don't think it'll be like the strictest thing. I don't think like Corey Lee will never start against a right-handed starter or anything like that.
Yeah.
That is kind of the general idea of probably where they'd break down, and that would probably involve Theis getting more starts. But I think Lee's versatility probably helps a lot in it because Corey Lee's pretty fast, and even if
Yeah.
he's certainly for a catcher, but he's like their best base runner statistically, like in terms of grabbing the extra base, just because like he's aggressive and takes really good leads. So I think you'd probably see a lot of games where Lee pinch runs for Theis and catches the rest of the game, and they'd be comfortable doing that and feel like that's, adding value from what Corey Lee does well for them. Also, theoretically, he's gunning down base runners late in the game, but when it could be valuable. So I think Tice will get more starts, but I don't think it's going to be like a AJ Pierzynski in his backup level, like timeshare split.
Yeah, well, I'm curious then to see who's going to be the opening day DH. I would like it to be Andrew Benintendi, but if Benintendi's fine in the outfield, I could still see him in left field. Austin Slater sounds like he's back. You could have an outfield of Benintendi, Robert, and Taylor. Maybe Slater DHs. Maybe we'll see some Travis Jankowski early on. I'm wondering if Brooks Baldwin gets a shot to be one of those super utility guys. And then Jacob Amaya can be a bench guy as well if Chase Mydroth is the starting shortstop. Even though I thought that he had an incredibly long shot at the start of spring training and making the team, Lenine Sosa is probably your opening day second baseman, White Sox fans. So, Leninites, rejoice, celebrate. Your guy did it. He survived. Which with the White Sox is a goal in itself during spring training. But the White Sox have completed spring training, and now we move forward to the regular season. As you heard earlier in the podcast, we have our live show opening day eve at the Rimowa Theater. We have some great guests will be joining us: Jim Callis of MLB.com, Courtney Finicum of Baseball Isn't Boring. More talk about the White Sox prospects and how that plan could work out, and also additional White Sox predictions during the live show. But now in this episode, we are going to have our best case, worst case, and our actual win-loss predictions for Sox Machine closer to opening day. We'll write those out and revisit them at the end of the season to see how close or how far away that we were with our predictions. But here we're going to take a look at the major offensive categories and major pitching categories and make our predictions for the 2025 season. I'm going to have Jim write his down so I can add them later on, as unfortunately on his end, he just went through a network outage. So we lost Jim halfway through the podcast. But let's start on the offensive side, James, because I'm with you. Runs are going to be a premium. Joe Sheehan did his season predictions, and he's predicting 499 runs scored by the White Sox in 2025. Man, it better not be below 500, just for an entertainment perspective. I don't know if I can handle that few of runs, but the White Sox definitely will need runs this season. So let's start with who we think is going to lead the White Sox in home runs. Last year, it took until the final week, but Andrew Benintendi edged out Paul DeJong as Benintendi led the White Sox with 20 home runs. James, who's your pick to click? Who do you have leading the White Sox in home runs in 2025?
God, still picking Brandon Drury because of my pure believer stuff right at this point. Like, this is hard. Because anyone who like hits a lot of home runs is like pushing their way off the team. So like a big Robert year gets them off. And we're at a point where like if Vaughn really like got going, that gets them off the team as well. Do I want to bet on Colson coming up and hitting a bunch of home runs? No, that feels a little spicy.
Yeah, that's
Do I
spicy.
want to make the most boring prediction ever? Maybe. I do like to spite the readers every now and then for no reason. I'll go Andrew Vaughn.
Andrew Vaughn for James. Does Vaughn get to 20 home runs?
I'm seeing a 22 dong season for Andrew Vaughn. How that doesn't get him out of there, I don't know. Maybe he pulls a hammy in July. It'd be predicated on the idea that he sticks around the full season. And but he, how would that make sense? Why would that happen? I don't know.
Why they
I
wouldn't
do.
trade Andrew Vaughn? Maybe nobody wants Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah, but like if he's had a 22 season, like I mean, there wasn't, obviously didn't go anywhere, but there was like at least trade talks with him last year, and he wasn't good. So if he was actually like returning to 2022 like levels where he's like a 110 WRC plus guy, like, and it's, you know, for a normal team isn't that expensive, you know, and it was a long commitment. I don't know, but I can't get myself, especially with like where Brian Ramos is at this spring and not knowing when his season really starts or gets going, and you know, Colson not having a full year, and you know, does he just go through a, you know, a stretch where nothing's going right, not even just like homers and walks. How much time do I really, how many at bats do I really expect Teal and Caro to have, let alone like have a bunch of power production right away? It feels like it's between which Benintendi or Vaughn gets plays a full season here. And now I want to lean myself towards Benintendi because, like, all things being equal, it's going to be harder to unload that contract than Vaughn. So I think I'm switching to Benintendi, even
Okay.
though not only picking like one of the smaller players on the team to lead the team in homers would be spicy enough, but to have him do it back-to-back seasons, man, what a weird sport. Benintendi.
All right. James going with Benintendi. He would have earned his contract if he does. See? That's why he gets paid the big bucks. He leads the team in homers.
That everyone would agree he earned his contract. That's how it would happen.
Even though I'm still not crazy about him getting the third base job, I'm going with Miguel Vargas. Shock me, Miguel Vargas hit 23 homers.
He
I
hit
don't
one
see
today.
anyone hitting 25. I know he hit one today. It's got to carry over. Luis Robert will have 18 before the All-Star break and gets traded. So again, we could be in late September to see if anyone beats out Luis Robert at the end of the season like last year, with Paul DeYoung hitting 19 homers before getting traded to Kansas City. But James got Andrew Benintendi. I got Miguel Vargas. RBIs. All right. See, this is, I'll start here. I just can't see a team trading for Andrew Vaughn. Like, I get it, but you're gonna need some serious injuries on the first base run. And I don't know if he's really a first baseman. So would that be an opportunity for teams to improve upon right hitting DH? Question mark? Don't they have guys in your system? Doesn't every Major League Baseball team have an Andrew Vaughn? Pretty much, I'm selling on myself that I don't see Vaughn getting traded. I see Vaughn staying with the White Sox and driving in 74 RBIs, which exceeds what he did last year when Andrew Vaughn led the White Sox with 70 RBIs. Andrew Vaughn once again will lead the White Sox in RBIs with 74. How about you, James? Who's your RBI leader prediction?
If I want like literally any consistency with what I just said in the last one, it would have to be Benintendi because he's both there the full season and at leading the team in home runs. If I simply want to hedge my bets by predicting a wildly different scenario each time, and thus I am bound to hit on like something eventually, well, then I can pick anything I want.
You could.
Who would I like just pick Vaughn to flip it so I like I'm. I have to win one. Really want to pick Brandon Drury, even though that, just is not very likely at this point. Robert's been batting second a lot, so I don't know how much RBIs he's going to get out of that spot. It's still plenty, but maybe a little diminished if he was hitting middle of the order. I guess Benintendi. I'm just putting all my eggs in this slightly above average American male size basket. Slightly below average. Let's go with Benintendi.
All right. James is going with Andrew Benintendi, lead the White Sox at home runs and RBIs. So we got home runs, we got RBIs. Let's move over to runs leader. Last year, Andrew Vaughn led the White Sox with 55 runs scored, which is so low. James, who are you feeling here? Could this be a place where like Chase Mydroth leads the White Sox in runs scored, or maybe a surprise candidate? Because as far as like trying to figure out who's a 26-man roster, it's also kind of hard to figure out what Will Venable's lineup's going to be.
This is where I want to take a shot and say something like Mydroff. If I really believed in like Vargas getting on base a lot, maybe that would work as well. I'll lean Mydroff. I'm revoking all previous allegiances. I'm converting to Leninism. Lenine Sosa, your runs leader. Someone's gonna hit all year and be here. Man, I should have picked them for homers. What was I thinking? I'm changing all my predictions to Lenine. That includes some pitching comes up later.
This for the runs leader, well, if I have Miguel Vargas leading the home runs, but I don't see him scoring a lot of runs because obviously I have Andrew Vaughn as the RBI leader. I'm going to go, this is where I'm going to be spicy. I'm going to go Luis Robert. Luis Robert batting maybe second in the lineup for the first half of the season will score enough runs that'll be hard for anyone on this White Sox team to overcome him, especially what I expect to be a post-trade deadline line shift of players for the White Sox, introducing a lot of faces. I don't even know if the runs leader for the White Sox in 2025 is going to reach 50 runs scored, which is embarrassingly low. But I'm going to go with Luis Robert leading the White Sox in runs scored. And then finally, on the offensive side, position player war. We're going to use the Fangraphs version for this. Last year, Paul DeJong led White Sox position players with a one war season on Fangraphs. Nobody else reached one war for White Sox position players. So, James, is this where you're going with leaning Sosa leading the White Sox in position player war? Is there somebody else that you have in mind?
I mean, I want to be like a rosy view would be like Luis Robert puts up so much like defensive value that like he has like this little two win cushion over everybody. I think the math on that is hard to get, even if like if he's not there the last 2 months or plus of the season, with my idea of like Lenin Sosa hitting 25 home runs or something. My like insane take is like Brooks Baldwin like playing every position on the diamond like gives him like this big defensive value cushion and then that he actually hits and becomes like a sneaky like high 2.5 to 3 win player by having like a 110 WRC plus a year, but like playing lots of short and center field simultaneously. Yeah, that's there's like. It's like it's kind of like the George Walkow pick. Like the likelihood of it happening are very low, but if I nail it, like I'll feel like a king forever. So I'll go with Brooks Baldwin somehow.
James is going with Brooks Baldwin. Does he reach two WAR?
I'm having him like he reaches two WAR because of like, let's say like 110 games.
Okay, it's a lot of playing time.
It's a lot of playing time, like mixed between like at least six positions. He's played like a ton of center this camp and the outfield corners. He's probably played shortstop the least, but I think you can kind of have him like you could make Chase Mydrop your starting shortstop, and like Brooks is on the roster, so thus we have a backup.
Yeah,
I think that's clean, and then you put Jacob Amaya back on the dusty trail and that opens up a 40-man spot. And then you only have to figure out one more from there. So that's my idea. How that relates to Brooks Baldwin getting to 2.5 war. I got a little off track, but that's, I want people to see how like the cobwebs into my mind, like overlap with each other to create this like obscene, this insane vision.
I'm going to go with Luis Robert. Luis Robert's at 2.5 war when he gets traded by the White Sox. And nobody exceeds two war for a position player front for the 2025 White Sox. I hope I'm wrong, but that's my pick. Luis Robert will lead the position players in war in just one half of a season, just like Paul DeJong did last year for the White Sox. That's our offensive predictions. Let's move over to pitching. Let's try to pick our wins leader for the White Sox. Last year, podcast listeners, can you guess who led the Chicago White Sox in wins? It was Eric Fetty with 7. He had 7 wins last year for the Chicago White Sox before he got traded. James, who's going to lead the White Sox in wins in 2025?
I'll go Davis Martin. I definitely had some thoughts about Marty Brooks because I think he'll like regularly be in there long enough, but I don't necessarily think all of the Martin gave us 2 more innings than like the normal starter would will be in service of victories. They might just be in service of let's use 2 relievers tonight.
Got it.
Even though you gave up a 4 spot in the second inning, let's just keep going. Might be those sorts of types of outings.
This is where I'm going to go a little off the wall because I think he's going to come in a lot of fourth inning. And because the first person that pitched doesn't qualify for the win, and maybe he just, He gets some vulture wins, not Vassell, Bryce Wilson. I think Bryce Wilson's going to lead the White Sox in wins this year. I don't know if he's going to reach double digits, but I'm thinking like 8 wins. Like if Eric Fetty led the White Sox with 7 wins last year, I'm not expecting a very high total on wins. So I'll go with Bryce Wilson. So James has got Davis Martin. I've got Bryce Wilson. Let's move over to saves. Last year, Michael Kopech led the White Sox with 9 saves on the season. These are just so depressing, low totals. I'll start with this one. I don't know. I foresee something bad happening injury-wise for Mike Clevinger. I know he had the surgery, and he's very optimistic that maybe they have fixed something for Clevinger. I was going to pick Gus Varland, but he just got optioned. So I'm looking at who is available. I'm going to go with Penn Murphy. 6 saves from the Murph Dog. Leads the White Sox in saves in 2025 with fewer saves than Kopech had last year. James, who's going to be the save leader for the White Sox in 2025?
You're not content to just make the off-the-wall choice. You have to reveal that it's a sad save total leading the White Sox.
Not optimistic on a high save total.
Don't want any mystery about what this can mean. You don't want people thinking Penn Murphy, like, breakout season's happening. You want to make it clear a normal Penn Murphy season's happening, but happening on this White Sox team.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just wanted to clarify your intent. I should just, like, predict Verlander Bilroa. Like, just like Drury, I'm not wavering in confidence just because of injury. He hasn't looked great. I want to believe in the stuff overall. It would be interesting. It would certainly be like a good development for the White Sox if Jordan Leisure led them in saves. I don't know if I quite get there. Cam Boozer is supposed to have pretty like neutral platoon splits, so maybe he's an option. But I don't think they're necessarily. I think if Boozer's closing a lot of games, they flip him more than I think that makes him a mainstay for the season. I'd love to go weird and pick like a AAA reliever to come up and dominate and take over the closer role. I don't know if I'm quite there on Pallett doing that this year. I think that'd be a little of a reach. Murphy's probably as good as any option.
You going with the Murph Dog?
Justin Anderson's been a little bit better since the spring. It started out very rough with him, but maybe him. All my like predictions so far have been like very positive and like dreaming of the ultimate season where Lenny Sosa probably proves all the haters wrong. So let's go with that spirit and buy into Jordan Leisure's splitter and put him as, because that's definitely a result you would like if he took over that bullpen. That'd be good for the White Sox.
So then let's go with most games appeared in. Last year, Justin Anderson appeared in 56 games for the White Sox, leading White Sox pitchers. Who are you feeling that Will Venable is going to lean on early and often, James? And who is strong enough to survive the season for the White Sox bullpen?
I see true more in role, but there are some stylistic similarities. There's some Luis Avalon and Brandon Isert. This kind of funky, soft-tossing lefty who just seems to be in the sixth inning every single time you turn on the White Sox game. I think he can do that. Avalon got this like some absurd appearance total, even though they traded him in August that 1 year. To the point where he got up to 58 appearances even though they traded him. And like when they traded him, like we all knew he was going to get traded at some point. Like I want to say it's 2017, they're trading everything. And he's like, man, I loved it here. I never wanted to leave. And you like he got traded and he wasn't in the game that day but he was still in Chicago because he hadn't like his travel wasn't set up yet. And he watched like his last game in the stands. I was like, man, Luis Avalon like just loved being on the 2017 White Sox and just pitching every day. I don't know if Isert will go that way personality wise, but I certainly feel like I've seen a ton of him this spring. kind of a low release point, funky lefty that I think is gonna, even though he's getting hit a little bit of late, I think probably makes the roster, or at least participates a lot, and probably just have a frequently have up situations where it's like, hey, their best lefty's coming up. It's like the fifth or sixth or seventh. It's got a medium leverage. Let's just throw Eisner at it and see if we can hand this off to our higher leverage crew a little bit later on. So 90 appearances, book it.
Oh, damn.
Well, like 65, I don't know.
Going to go with Cam Boozer. I see Cam Boozer pitching a lot, to your point of Brandon Eisert. When the game's the sixth or seventh inning, it's Boozer time. I'm seeing 60 appearances by Cam Boozer for the White Sox in 2025. Again, we'll see based on the injuries that are happening to the pitchers if anybody gets that high. But yeah, I've got Boozer. James has got Brandon Eisert. Best qualified ERA. Shocker, no one qualified for the ERA title in 2024 for the White Sox. The lowest ERA for any pitcher that exceeded 100 innings for the White Sox last year was actually Eric Fetty at 3.11, beating out Garrett Crochet. James, is anyone going to qualify for the ERA for the White Sox this season? Or should we just lower the bar to, is anyone going to pitch 100 innings and who's going to have the best ERA?
So the qualifier, they needed 162, right?
Yeah.
And Crochet didn't.
He missed it. He was at 147.
I'm gonna go Cannon because Perez won't qualify because he'll get dealt.
Okay, that's a good one. I
Unless
also had
he
Cannon
gets
too when I.
torched, in which case Cannon would win as well.
So I guess we are both predicting that Jonathan Cannon is going to exceed 162 innings this year.
Right, whereas I'm bearish on Burke or Martin doing that.
Right. But if we lower the bar to 100 innings, is this where you think Davis Martin can have the best a better ERA than Jonathan Cannon?
Yeah, I think he could. If we go to like 100, I might get weird and like Shane Smith catches like
Right.
3.5 and gets like shut down,
Yeah.
like after like 110. So yeah, if you, that'd be my little funky wild card guess if we go that route.
Yeah, that if you
But off
lower
the
to
top.
100 innings, I'm with you. I'm pretty hyped up about Shane Smith and what he could do for the White Sox. Watch, he blows out early, but I'm hopeful. I'm most optimistic about Shane Smith and what he can do for the White Sox to at least start the season. Can't wait for him to make his first start in the majors soon. And then we will conclude with pitcher war. So Garrett Crochet led the White Sox in war last year, according to Fangraphs, at a 4.7 clip. And of course, that was a big reason why the Boston Red Sox traded a lot to obtain Garrett Crochet this offseason. James, who is going to lead White Sox pitchers in war?
I will throw the dart here.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I could see a sneaky two-win season from Davis Martin, which builds up more confidence for White Sox fans that he is somebody that could help out in the rotation. I think we're hopeful. I think you reported it. Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith are going to start the year at Birmingham together, which makes
Smith is
those
like the only
games.
one they're not like locked in on of that group, but the intention is to have Smith at Birmingham probably for the bulk of the year.
Okay.
But like, yeah, Schultz is going back. They want to send Wilkham Gonzalez there, and like, they definitely want Grant Taylor there. And Grant Taylor is also literally starting games of the double A roster on the backfield, so that seems like a sign.
Got it. That could be a lot of fun for Birmingham. Again, just like the White Sox, hopefully they have enough bats to hit. But Birmingham's gonna have some arms. They're gonna have some pitching. But in 2026, I think a lot of White Sox fans are hopeful that Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith could help lead a rotation. Maybe Grant Taylor's another one too. But you still need some glue guys in the rotation, some more consistency, and hopefully the dart Davis Martin can be that. So I'm with you. I'm foreseeing a sneaky two-win season for Davis Martin and the Chicago White Sox in 2025. Those are our 2025 predictions for the major categories for the Chicago White Sox. Let us know who you got for each of these categories in the comments section on SoxMachine.com, or you can hit us up as well on social media. We're at SoxMachine. You can follow James on all the social media platforms at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. or you can follow us on Blue Sky. I'm josh.soxmachine.com and James is jrfegan.soxmachine.com. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. We made it, guys. It's opening day week, so we'll have more coverage each day leading up to opening day. And, of course, our live podcast at the Remova Theater for opening day eve on Wednesday, March 26th. And, again, opening day Thursday, March 27th. Weather pending right now looks like it's going to be in the low to mid-50s. Just need to make sure the rain stays away for White Sox and Angels. That is a 3:10 p.m. Central Time start. Derek Rose will throw the first pitch before the game. Parking lots will open at 12:10 p.m. Central Time. So if you want to do some tailgating before opening day, lots will be open 3 hours before first pitch as the White Sox extend that window. But thank you so much for listening to this Sox Machine podcast. If you just discovered the podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. If you enjoy our work and you want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, go to SoxMachine.com and sign up for a subscription today. Monthly plans start at $5. You can also sign up for an annual subscription for a discount. Or if you have a friend or family member who hasn't signed up yet, you can now gift subscriptions to your loved ones and your fellow White Sox fans on SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside James Fegan and Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.